Welcome to What I Wish I Learned in Law School. My name is Audrey Earhart, and I, just like you, am a practicing attorney, but I'm also the CEO and founder of Practice 42. At Practice 42, our goal is to build and sustain successful law practices across the nation. We do that in so many different ways, and I can't wait to talk to you more about that. Right now, I want you to know we're going to go ahead and focus on how you can become the next guest on my podcast, What I Wish I Learned in Law School, and share so much of your journey with our audience. I'm so excited. It's going to take about 15 to 20 minutes. Let's go ahead and jump in. Hello, friends, and welcome back to What I Wish I Learned in Law School. My name is Audrey Earhart, and I'm an attorney just like you, licensed in Florida, but I am also the CEO and founder of Practice 42, which is bringing you this amazing podcast. And I'm so happy today to be joined by my good friend and colleague, Jennifer Vanderveen. Jen, welcome. Thank you.
Thanks for having me. This is fun.
I'm so glad you're here. We're going to have a good time. Jen and I have been super nerds and friends for a long time. So if you like Star Wars, if you like Disney, if you don't, you should probably just hang up right now because
Right. You're absolutely
you can go from there. But Jen, tell us about you and your amazing practice. And then we're going to get into all these amazing things that we wish we could have learned in law school.
So I am an elder and special needs law attorney based in Mishawaka, Indiana, which, if you don't know, is adjacent to South Bend, Notre Dame land. I've been on my own in my own practice for just over a year after working for 25 years for other people and finally decided I just needed to go out there and make the firm I wanted to work for.
That's amazing. That is amazing. And what an interesting journey that you had 25 years with other folks and then decided to take this journey yourself. I think there's that first question, right? What do you wish you learned in law school? And I think you and I could probably talk 4 hours on that, to put it mildly, but take it away and tell us all of your knowledge.
So I should preface this by saying I got a bit of a reputation as the law firm killer because the first four firms I worked for within a year of me leaving or while I was there no longer existed in their current form.
Whoa, that's interesting. Okay, tell us about that.
So there was lots of drama, but I came out of a top-tier law school where if you don't get a job right out of law school, this was the 90s, You're supposed to go to an Amlaw 100 firm and you're supposed to get a six-figure salary and all of that. And I was moving to Indiana where I knew no one and was trying to break into the legal field. But I followed the path I thought I was supposed to and ended up at a mid-size law firm downtown Indianapolis. Spent 2 years there, miserable.
Okay.
Got fired.
Interesting. Okay.
Knocked around for about a year trying to find something else, did some temp work, taught at a college, which, yeah, probably will never do that again. Then I got hired with another mid-sized firm, one of those firms you're supposed to work for, the big names. That lasted 6 months.
Okay.
And at both these places, I was doing high-end tax work because I'm a tax nerd.
Yep, gotcha.
And if you want to do tax law, you have to work in the high-end firms to do the high-end tax nerd stuff. So the day I was fired from my second firm, I had just taken my second pregnancy test.
Okay.
And discovered that, yeah, that first one wasn't a fluke. So a little bit of a panic and called my headhunter and said, all right, here's the situation. About a week later, she calls me and she says, I have a temp position at a firm. It's a paralegal position, but it'd be good just to get you through until the baby comes and then we can figure out what we're doing. It was an elder law firm.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Run by one of NALA's founders and past presidents. And I found my calling.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was just like a light bulb went on in my head. And I discovered that I could have the fun and the complexity and the playing with loopholes that I loved about tax law just in a different area.
Gotcha.
instead of a client yelling at you about why'd you only save 5 million, why not 15? You have people crying because you saved their house.
Yes, a very different perspective.
So then that firm split up.
Because you were there. That's right there where that happened. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was there. That firm split up. So I went to another firm.
Okay.
That one split up and I stayed after the split.
Ooh. Okay.
So that was a little crazy on its own. And then my husband got a job in South Bend.
Okay.
I was working on the south side of Indianapolis. That's about 3.5 hours away.
Wow. Okay.
And the firm didn't want me to go. I was their only elder law attorney, only elder law associate.
Okay.
So I spent 7 years going back and forth between Indianapolis and South Bend.
Oh, wow. 3 hours away.
Yeah.
Okay.
On the verge of going out on my own.
Sure.
Had everything formed, had the name. When someone talked me into joining another firm.
Okay.
I thought, okay, we'll do this. So I did that for about 10 years. And then I discovered that there's only so many ways you can twist a star-shaped peg to fit it into a round hole.
True, true.
And that star-shaped peg is never going to fit into that round hole.
No, never perfectly. Absolutely. I agree with that.
So I decided to go out and make my own star-shaped hole.
Perfect.
And it took a lot of reflection over the years of discovering the big thing about what I wish I learned in law school. I wish I learned who I was.
Mm. Yep. I think that's it. That's such a powerful statement. Sorry, go ahead.
And learned that it's okay to not be the person who can literally write down every 6 minutes what they're doing precisely and perfectly, never miss one. I spent 25 years saying, just try harder.
Mm-hmm. Or try to mold yourself to fit this, mold yourself to fit a mold that works for someone else. That we don't hear, you can forge your own way and it can be just as amazing, if not more amazing.
It is. We were talking a little bit before we got on about the mental health issues of this. And I think the key for a lot of attorneys is figuring out who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And how you think. Not everyone thinks the same.
Absolutely.
And not everybody's brain works the same.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mine does work very different than a lot of people's. We acknowledge, we admit, and we compensate.
And I think that's a key part of it, right? When we figure out how we work best, because we've talked about this for years. If there was one way to run a law practice and operate within it, we probably would all follow that model, but everyone and be wildly successful and have no stress. What is that great statement? Make more money, less stress, or more money, less stress. But with that being said, there's not. It's a lot of times finding your own path to be able to get the results you want, not just for your clients, which I think is such an important part of advocacy, but being able to do it your way that will deliver it and not drive you insane.
And if you're not happy in what you're doing, your clients aren't going to be happy.
100%. I agree with that.
And it was when I realized I loved elder law.
Okay.
But I hated the practice of elder law.
Hmm.
That I took a step back and said, wait a minute. There's got to be a way to do this. And I made suggestions to my other firm. I said, I've looked into some stuff. Can we try this technology, that technology, this option, that option? Nope, this is how we do it.
Sure.
That just doesn't work for me. And no. If I had the cojones to say that as a 25-year-old associate, I could have probably saved myself a lot of grief.
Sure. Do you think in some ways that not having the cojones to say that, because I agree with you, I agree much the same way. I didn't find my voice in law for the first 6 years, but then now looking at what I do now, which is being the back office and support for many lawyers across the nation, that was another 16 years to do it until I got to my own place of doing it myself. and saying, I'm good enough, right? That imposter syndrome that kind of comes in and feeds on us. If it's feeding on us in our 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, we know it's really feeding on us in our 20s.
Oh, absolutely. And part of what got me over, I'm still not completely over the imposter syndrome, as some of my friends frequently remind me. But part of what got me over that, and this is a shameless plug for the National Academy of Elder Law Attorneys.
And that was what Jen was saying when she said NALA earlier, the National Academy of Elder Law Attorneys.
Part of what got me over that imposter syndrome and gave me the confidence to do all this was having that network of like-minded attorneys who are there to support you. It's my tribe.
Sure.
And having their encouragement and their support that, yes, you do know this, and yes, you can do this, has been invaluable.
I agree with that. I deeply agree with that. And finding your voice with other peers, which it's going to things and exposing yourself. So often I think we get tunnel vision and we say, I have to stay in my practice. I have to just stay in my practice, get work done, not branch out, not go to something like just recently, the National Academy of Elder Law Attorneys was in Boston. I'm in Florida, you're in Indiana. We still pick up and go because that exposure to others and that camaraderie. You and I met because I was like, have you seen this taco restaurant at Disney? Nothing about law, but I was like, let's go make this happen. And we went. And that's how we formed a friendship, which again is so impactful for both of us. Mm-hmm. And overcoming and talking about these challenges. I think a lot of times as lawyers, it can be so competitive, or we're told to think a certain way, or we're told to don't share your ideas, keep them to yourself, that it's very isolating. And I find that can be tough.
It is. And I'm seeing a lot of younger attorneys not wanting to join organizations,
I agree. You know,
outside of the local bar association. And yes, it's important to know your local bar and know the lawyers in your local area, but it is so refreshing to talk to people from across the country. The number of people who I now count among my closest friends that I never would have encountered in life. And getting their perspective on things. It's really a more collaborative, collegial environment. And I think that can really help people figure out who they are and what they need.
And learning from others and just hearing. I find a lot of times, even that last 10 minutes in a room when someone's speaking and then they open it up for questions, just hearing how others think. I was at a CLE just recently, not NALA, but a different one. But it was so interesting because a couple of the questions that were asked, I never would have thought of. But when I heard someone else say it, I thought to myself, that's a really unique perspective. What can I do with that? I think a lot of people sometimes leave at the end of the presentation and don't stay for the questions. That's always my favorite part in presentations, of what are other people asking that I should have been smarter. And there you go, imposter syndrome right there. Yeah. I should have been smarter and asked that question, but of course I didn't. So there's that.
And my work with NALA over the years really led me to being comfortable in my own skin and being comfortable with my neurodivergence, and to the point where I was finally bold enough to do a Star Wars opening crawl at a session at the NALA conference.
I love that. May the 4th be with you every right? year. Yes.
I finally said, I'm just going to be me.
I get that.
And it took me until I was nearly 50 to figure it out, but.
Do you think? No, I'm good. Go ahead.
That's what I wish I had known before I went to law school.
No, I agree with that. And isn't it interesting that so often attorneys, I talk to attorneys, you talk to ourselves, we're trying to fit that. And I put this in air quotes, attorney mold. And yes. There really isn't an attorney mold. That's whoever you are is. We talk so much about meeting the clients or our potential clients where they are. It's also meeting ourselves where we are. And we don't give ourselves, I think a lot of times as high functioning and busy attorneys, we don't give ourselves a lot of grace to figure things out on what we need to do. But creating your own practice, what a unique journey, and getting to do things your own way. How amazing. So
it has been. And it's, I grew up watching LA Law, Allie McBeal.
Allie McBeal.
I think Allie McBeal was what convinced me that crazy people can be lawyers.
Absolutely.
But then I got out into the real world and I discovered that real law firms were not LA Law. They were not Ally McBeal. People didn't laugh. People didn't talk in the hallways. No.
No.
And if that's the environment you want, you need to go out and make it for yourself.
I always liken it to when you watch Law and Order, right? And they show you the crime and then we go into the trial and they always show you those snippets. Part 48,
yes.
Part 74, Part 157. It doesn't happen in an hour. It's an incredibly long journey. And there's a lot of research and finding your own way to be able to get the results that you need. And I think a lot of times we have a semester or we have a year on one subject, and that's not necessarily the practical application. I remember taking gratuitous transfers, which for those of you who don't know, that is estate planning. And I was from a family of people who did estate planning. So I should have known this. And I got to gratuitous transfers going, what is that? And then heard about the fertile octogenarian. I was like, what is going on? This is how to create a will, and still couldn't get out of law school knowing how to create a will. So there's that huge gap between what do we need to know? And then also, how do we implement that?
Right. And I now teach a class for an LLM program. And I tell them right up front, I said, look, we're all practicing lawyers. We all know that we're not here to memorize esoteric concepts. This will not be a closed book exam. This will be real life. And yes. In real life, you don't have a closed book.
Because isn't that an interesting comment that you made, right? We're practicing lawyers. We practice law. It's like we're counselors at law. We are there trying to help our clients find the best solution possible for things that are mucky. I don't know how to say that better. People don't come to lawyers typically when they're happy. Usually it's the worst day for them. And that's why you become that person in their lives that, yes, we have 1,000 clients. Yes, we have 100 clients. Yes, we have 10 clients, but you are the one attorney.
Right.
And I find a lot of times that can be a hard thing to understand, especially for newer lawyers, that just because you close that scope of representation, it's not over. You are the lawyer for this person for who knows how long.
And it's that relationship. And in a lot of ways, it's those relationships that help you build your practice.
Exactly. Exactly. Because one happy person, as we know, one happy person is going to tell everyone else that they're happy about, just like that squeaky wheel also is going to tell everyone if they're not happy.
Exactly.
So how do we make sure that we are able to help them and help them feel supported as we grow? Because when 10 clients become 100, what do we do? When is it time to staff forward? Can we use AI in our practice? Those types of things to help us.
I will tell you, AI in our practice it's a hot button issue.
Absolutely it is.
We could do a whole separate podcast on it. But it is really something that I think we should be embracing. I've definitely found that I can do a whole lot more efficiently with Microsoft. I use Microsoft Copilot just because that's what's attached to my Microsoft Office.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you just tell it to draft a letter for you and then you just edit it.
And that's important to say. And then you don't just send it out without editing it. We still have to help the AI learn.
Right. I was at a seminar recently where the presenter on AI said, you have to treat AI like it is a first year associate.
I love that statement. I've heard that before, and that's a great statement.
Yeah. But if you do that, it can be the best first year associate you ever paid $20 a month for.
I also, and I will say also, and you'll get this as a nerd, I also am super polite to my AI because I worry about that Skynet moment when it becomes sentient and that comes after me. So I'm always like, could you please do this?
Yes.
Same. Common courtesy, teaching my AI.
Yes. So. We also text in complete sentences.
Yes, we also do that. We're those people. We're also
those people.
I had one recently from one of my children and I now use the Urban Dictionary to figure out what the text messages actually mean, because who knew? Yeah. Apparently in case AAFK means away from keyboard.
Oh, okay.
I didn't know I needed to tell that to people, but apparently that's very important. And gaming.
I was recently told that putting a period at the end of my text was yelling at people.
Oh, I heard that too. I thought it was shouty caps, like the all caps. Certainly a period, any punctuation means that you're shouting at someone.
Then everyone thinks I'm yelling at them.
I asked one of my friends who said this to me. I said, what if I use proper grammar like there and I use TH apostrophe RE? Is that shouting? I'm just using proper grammar. Yeah. And I got the blank stare back. For those of you who are truly just out of law school and just went from undergrad to law school, we apologize.
Yes.
Please reach out to both Audrey Earhart and Jennifer Vanderveen to let us know how to do this better. That would be
great.
Yes.
Yes. And we're in that weird position where we're dealing with older adults.
Yes.
Our parents are getting older. We're dealing, like my mother, bless her heart, her texts we have to sound out.
Oh, gotcha. Gotcha.
Because she doesn't type real well on the phone.
Gotcha.
So you have to work your way through them. And then there's my son who just texts me a string of random letters.
Yes. And we're trying to bridge that gap because we're now that sandwich generation caregiver space.
Right.
Of what is actually happening. So I I was told recently by a younger associate that I don't like physical mail. I take that as a threat. I take physical mail as that's actually like the IRS wanting to talk to you or a business document. But apparently physical mail, if it's not emailed, it's not to be trusted. I look at it the reverse. If it's not, I worry about that too. So that's something that, and I worry about that. I will say that specifically for this podcast, I worry about that as a trend. Mm-hmm. Because I think for younger lawyers, we have to still have a place for physical mail. And older, all of us, we need a place for physical mail versus a place in a safe space for email. And we can't trust email, in my opinion, like we trust a physical letter, but maybe that will change soon. I don't know.
Maybe, I don't know. I tend to think that people pause a little bit more when they send physical mail.
Yes, I agree with that.
And in fact, I will sometimes type up an email in Word, like I'm doing a real letter, just to force myself to pause and think about what I'm saying before I push send.
Absolutely. I agree with that. And I think we have to do that. I think there's so much of a sense to be urgent and to be rushed in our practices. We really can't do that. It's not a matter of a competition of who gets done faster. If things take longer, then we need to build out that case process so we know that, right? Not that we're doing everything all at once.
And it's a matter of civility.
Yes, I 100% agree.
Just firing off the first thing that comes to your mind when you get an email from a caseworker from your state agency is probably not what you should be doing.
No, it's just if we get perhaps not a 5-star review, but a 4-star review, we want to pause and think about that. What does that mean when I respond back? Let me give myself 24 hours. And they're not expecting something today. Now, they might be expecting something today. And if the judge calls you, of course, pick up that phone call right then. But at that being said, take the time to do the job the way you want to with intention. I think that's an important part of it, too.
It is. It is.
Slowing down and carving out and then making sure that your star doesn't have to fit in a round hole. You can make a star-shaped hole.
Exactly.
I love that. And I love also that you brought that up. There is, I think, still that idea of where am I going with my law degree? I think there still is that permeation of I should go to big law. I should go and do this. And I should really rush in and I should really go in and take these steps that everyone else is doing. But I don't think there's a lot of understanding of you can also form your own path. You can find your tribe, as you said, you can find it earlier rather than later.
Right.
And support that you need to do what you want to do.
Yeah. And part of that is just knowing that other options are out there. Just because the law firms that show up for, I don't know, do they still do interview day?
It's been 20 years for me, but they used to.
Yeah. We used to have, because I got kicked out of interview day.
You did not.
So the law school I went to, we were told navy, black skirt, white blouse, pearls, hose, low heels.
I
should have been plum.
Oh, no, you did not. Oh, you
broke the did.
Rules. Of course you did. Of course you did. Yes.
I showed up in plum and they're like, you can't interview. I said, too late now. So I actually did end up interviewing, but I had to get a little stern about it.
You got the talking to.
I'm like, are you hiring attorneys or Stepford Wives?
There's a good question there. My third ever hearing. I went up. It was my hearing, guardianship case. I showed up in pants. Okay.
Ooh.
2005. Pants are a thing, but apparently not really a thing. And so the judge didn't look at me, didn't acknowledge me. And luckily I had a co-counsel or opposing counsel that was very kind and understood why we were there and led the hearing. And then at the end, I asked the judge if I could talk to him. The judge walked out and because I couldn't figure out what was going on. My client was in shock. I was in shock, the whole thing. And so the other attorney very politely came over to my table and said, next time wear a skirt.
I actually had a judge from the bench say, Mrs. Vanderveen, since this is your first time in this court, we will let this go. But in the future, I expect ladies to wear skirts.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just never went back.
That was very much, that was what I did. That was my, I went back. The one time I had to go back because one of the senior partners could not make the hearing, I wore the frilliest skirt. I don't think that skirt would be allowed today. It looked like an inverted cupcake. But because I was like, I will be, and I was told, you look very nice today. Thank you so much, Your Honor. But that being said, I think also that stigma still persists. And for mm-hmm. those of you who are sitting here laughing and saying, that would never happen. Oh, it sure does.
It does.
Yeah. And it still happens today. But that being said, when that happens, we also want to pause and we could have that knee-jerk reaction. We could have that angry reaction. But also, how can we move forward in a proactive way in that space and find ways not to go back to that court? But also find ways to get through that with grace and thinking about, just like you would not send an angry email or apparently send a text with punctuation.
Apparently. I will say I did bite back once. I was in a hearing and I was in front of a judge that I appeared before often. I knew this judge very well. In fact, I had a hearing not long after my son was born and he let me use his office to nurse.
That's amazing. Oh, wow. You know,
this judge was really someone I had a good relationship with. And opposing counsel kept saying, young lady, young lady. And finally I said, old man. And he looked at the judge, he goes, Your Honor. And he said, I think Mrs. Vanderveen is well within her rights to address you as you have been addressing her.
That's amazing. That's amazing. What a good redemption bench story. I love that.
Yeah. So sometimes they're on our side.
They are. And I think that's important. And also, I think that's important to say, I think we brought up a really interesting sidebar, but unintentionally, you also can form a relationship with your judge. You can get to know them. You can schedule time to talk to them and learn their practices. I think that's really important. And that is also, I think, where your local bar association, especially if judges attend, can be super helpful for you to get to know people and to move that forward.
Yes. Yeah. Both are very important. You want to be known in your local area. You want to know the other attorneys. You want to know the judges. And you want to push yourself outside of your local area because, frankly, the people in your local area are your competition and they're not going to want to give you all the secrets. But somebody from Massachusetts might just give you some helpful advice that changes your life.
Absolutely. Changes your life. Your practice, your people could be in another state, but in your practice area, which can make it seem very small, which is great. Jen, if people want to reach out to you, how do they find you?
So the website is VanderveenElderLaw.com. I am Jennifer at VanderveenElderLaw.com and happy to chat with anybody, answer any questions people have. Shoot me an email if you have questions about practicing law while neurodivergent. I'm happy to talk.
I am so appreciative of you being here. You are just such an amazing attorney, such an inspiration. I love the feedback of the, you just make your own star-shaped mold and make it happen and throw the rest of it out. Everyone, thank you for being part of this with us for another podcast. My name is Audrey. You're here at What I Wish I Learned in Law School. Thank you so much, Jen, and we will see everyone next time. It's Audrey Earhart here. Thank you so much for listening to my podcast, What I Wish I Learned in Law School. Listen, if you are a successful attorney and you want to share your message and you have something that you want to give back here, I would love you to have you there to be a part of my program. And that's, again, the What I Wish I Learned in Law School platform. That's our podcast. This is where you're really going to have the opportunity to share our amazing message. And listen, if you got something out of this interview, it's really important that you share our podcast with your social media. It's not just about our social media where we're going to be putting this out on our Instagram, Practice 42, our Facebook, Practice 42. You'll even see it on my LinkedIn, Audrey, and you'll also see it Practice 42's LinkedIn as well. We really want you to be part of this community so we can get your unique message out. We're putting out so much content on a weekly basis. I know you're going to find something that piques your interest, you can learn from, share with your audience too. And listen, you can just do a quick screenshot of your phone number and text it to a friend so they can take a look at everything. They can see what you're up to on social media. They can see what we're up to. And really, this is the way that we're going to help our lawyer community learn what they need to know. There's so much that none of us learned in law school about how to run a business, how to optimize our processes, how to get the right marketing for our practice, how to use legal technology, which changes on a daily basis. Listen, let's get connected. Let's stay connected. I'm so appreciative of you for being here. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.